Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. And our top story today, meeting the threat of fraud in the financial and retirement services industries. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Tim Rouse is the executive director of the Spark Institute, and Russell Anderson is the head of financial crime services at LIMRA. Russell, Tim, so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Great to be here.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, this is a hot topic. But before we get into kind of the machinations and the who, the how, the why, let's talk about why Spark has partnered with LIMRA to help address this threat of fraud in the financial and retirement services industries.
So happy to take that, Jeff. Thanks again for having us. As you know from previous shows, the Spark Institute developed industry best practices for fraud prevention years ago. And last year, Spark spun the topic of fraud prevention out of the Data Security Oversight Board to have its own dedicated committee. This partner with LIMRA is just a continuation of that focus on fraud prevention. Now, Russ will discuss the continued threat of fraudsters pose to our industry later and to the retirement savings of millions of Americans. But as an example of how partnering improves the overall industry defenses, let me just share this one anecdote with you. About 6 years ago, our members started to see non-family fraud on retirement accounts from outside actors. So Spark brought together the industry members, and together they started to share their experiences of what turned out to be common experiences across members. From that, members learned from one another and closed down these fraudsters. When you look at public data published in 5500 reports, you actually see this drop in fraud occurrences and losses from accounts. But since then, the numbers have started to trend up as criminals continue to learn and come up with new ways to attack us. So it's really critical for us to continue to improve our efforts on this front. And that's really the purpose of our continued relationship with LIMRA.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you on that, Tim. Really, really good points. And Russ, I want to bring you in here. Tim talked about this, maybe a little bit of a trend up. Yeah, there are a lot of bad actors out there, state sponsored, but also, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But what has been the experience for the financial and retirement, financial services and retirement industry?
Yeah, you know, very similar to what Tim outlined, right? It was interesting. It was maybe 6 to 10 years ago when the industry really experienced really a shift in the fraud and fraud experiences they dealt with. It was around that time when what we call third-party account takeover fraud, or really identity exploitation fraud, started to really hit the industry, because the fraudsters figure out a couple of things at that point, right? One, there is literally trillions of dollars, right, in retirement accounts and insurance policies. Number two, you know, the industry until that time hadn't dealt with this type of fraud, right? So their authentication standards, their fraud prevention controls weren't necessarily designed at that time, right, to beat back those fraudsters. So when that happened, it really kind of put the industry on notice that there's been a significant change. And as an industry, we need to start working together, right, to combat, you know, this common threat. We have seen, you know, the fraud kind of evolve. You know, it was interesting enough around COVID, we saw kind of a decrease in attacks targeting, you know, the individual member companies and record keepers to some extent, because fraudsters are very opportunistic, right? When the pandemic hit, there was a whole other host of fraud they could go after, right? There was a lot of government money, a lot of funding, a lot of different type of COVID schemes. But sure enough, we've seen, you know, the third-party account takeover fraudsters come back and come back really with a vengeance. Our members use a tool called FraudShare to share information with each other. And according to that data, you know, it gives us really good insights into actual fraud and fraud activity and experiences in the industry. So last year, right now, the results are still kind of being compiled, but we saw about a 17% increase in attempts in fraud hitting our member companies last year. And that's on top of a 37% increase in attempts in the previous year. And that's just significant because, unfortunately, there's no way to stop these bad actors from trying, right? We can have all the best controls in the world to stop them from being successful, but they're always going to start, continue to try. And why is that? They have incredibly easy access to all the data they need to impersonate any one of us. And I think another important factor, the industry does and continues to do a great job of defending, participant accounts and their records. And what we frequently see almost exclusively is when there is an issue and where someone is trying to impersonate, one of our participants, it's rare that the breach really occurred at, the record keeper, at the participant company. The breach almost always occurs at other institutions. Just think of all the headlines you've seen over the last decade about all the significant data breaches. Also, potential significant activity targeting individual email accounts, right? We all get multiple emails a day, someone trying to get us to click on a malicious link. One of the reasons, they want to access our email so they can learn all about us. And that's that much easier for them to impersonate us. So what we see the industry doing is working together, sharing information to learn more about how we can better control and beat back, these bad actors. Our benchmark survey we're getting ready to roll out, is really encouraging. It indicates almost 90% of all the respondents acknowledge and agree that working together as an industry to share information, share best practices does work to help combat, beat back the fraudsters. One thing we'd like to say, and this kind of phrase got adopted early on, when it comes to fighting fraud, we're all peers, not competitors. And that certainly, in my opinion, has helped the industry get much better at combating fraud and successfully, preventing, the fraudsters from being successful.
Yeah, it sounds like, Russ, I mean, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And Tim, I mean, you already touched on the cybersecurity and data privacy or data task forces, I should say. And there's even what I would call data hygiene guidelines. How do you maintain good data during a transition, all aspects of record keeping and administration? But what are members saying? What are the retirement ecosystem members that are part of Spark? You guys are the most well-known, I can think of, association or organization that represents all aspects of the retirement community. What are they saying about fraud and their organization's preparedness, Tim?
Well, we do have and continue to spend a lot of resources and effort to protect both plans and participant accounts. Our recent focus, however, is turned to, as Russ pointed out, third-party access and how to improve the protections there. The industry continues to expand connections with other parties to service participants. A good example might be Secure 2.0 now allowing for plans to integrate with student loans. Okay, that is another, just an example of another connection that opens up a new vector for attacks for fraudsters. And so a lot of our focus now has been on those third-party interactions and to make sure that there are adequate protections and controls in place to make sure that they don't become the access point for whether it's a data breach or whether it's a fraud.
Yeah. And Russ, I want to kind of close out this part of the show. Spark, LIMRA, two heavyweights in the retirement services, retirement industry and the financial services industry. I mean, your combined membership is absolutely amazing and stunning. What does this partnership look like in 2024? What can we expect? So, you guys have highlighted concerns about third-party actors, bad actors, but what can we expect from the combined resources of both organizations?
Yeah, I think the real power initially is going to come from the ability for just greater collaboration, sharing information. You know, what you said is spot on. Between Spark and between LIMRA, we got virtually the entire industry, you know, covered when it comes to retirement and insurance, you know, for the nation. And as I said, our members realized early on, sharing information and communicating with each other is critical. That's how you learn about the evolution of attacks. That's how you learn the different threat indicators that these fraudsters are using. So one thing we're kind of almost wrapping up now is our benchmark survey. We do an annual benchmark survey. This year, we more closely partner with Spark members to incorporate additional questions into the benchmark survey. And it's very comprehensive. It's over 70 different questions. This survey helps all of our members better understand what are the methods used by all the member companies, you know, when it comes to their structure of the fraud prevention teams, the governance, the organization of those teams, the technology they use, their authentication procedures. And that information helps them to kind of compare and benchmark their businesses, their operations against each other, so they can get a sense of, you know, is there anything we're doing that we should do differently? Is there anything we're doing maybe we should start, you know, doing? So we're going to be releasing those results shortly. That's a great example of sharing information with each other in a formal manner. We each have our various committees sharing information across those committees. One thing we're exploring right now is another consumer piece that can help participants learn what can they do to better protect themselves. And unfortunately, they do suffer the consequences occasionally, right? So occasionally their account is accessed and compromised. We want to make sure we educate, you know, those participants. What actions do you need to take? Because if your account is compromised at one institution, you can rest assured that fraudster or other fraudsters are going to find out where all your other accounts are. They don't necessarily know that, but what they do know is all the phone numbers and the websites of all the financial services companies. So participants need to know, I need to reach out to all my other financial institutions, make sure those accounts are locked down. And there's a whole host of other, you know, tips and tricks they need to employ, credit checks, better security control procedures, a better email, personal computing hygiene. So we're looking to do some pieces on that to help educate the sponsors and those participants. And we're also starting to talk now about, we haven't really figured out the name yet, but it's our kind of event, our fraud cybersecurity event. We're going to work to pull, you know, the industry together for, you know, some type of an event in 2025 to help, again, promote sharing information, learning best practices, and keep that going. And then lastly, work together to promote better information sharing through tools and capabilities such as FraudShare that allow members to share with each other in real time or near real time the incidents of fraud and what are the threat indicators those fraudsters are using. And sharing that information helps other members prevent similar or related attacks. So we're super excited about the collaborative partnership. And again, when everybody works together, everybody's stronger, right? And that's kind of our goal going forward.
Yeah, it look, these hackers are like locusts. They just go from one organization, they try to go from one organization to another, and they need to be treated like locusts and kind of tamped down. Well, thanks, Tim and Russ. Great to see you. Thanks for sharing your perspective. And when we come back, we'll talk about how technology companies are preparing and helping organizations prepare for fraud. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
It's
especially for the smaller businesses. I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Welcome back. We're now joined by Pat Kinsel. He is the CEO and founder of Proof. Pat, so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thrilled to be here.
Yeah, and look, we had a great conversation with Tim Rouse and Russell Anderson of Spark and Limmer, respectively. They're joining forces to tackle what is arguably a very challenging topic, fraud. And I want to start off our conversation by asking, how pervasive is this threat of cyber fraud in individuals, you know, regular people, day-to-day economic and financial activities?
I mean, it's an enormous problem. I mean, we are in a horrible situation, accelerating towards a devastating situation. I mean, you know, FinCEN came out with data recently. I think one of the questions is, how big is the problem actually? And everyone's trying to size it, right? And so you hear 20 billion, 30 billion. And FinCEN's report recently came out, and I believe the number was 360 billion reported in 2021. And the key word there is reported. So the problem is even greater than 360 billion. And the other, you know, aspect for this audience is a good 57% or $200 billion of that fraud directly goes against depository institutions and people who are responsible for taking, you know, care and custody of your money. So it's an enormous problem in any industry. It's getting worse, whether you look at the real estate industry with wire fraud, you know, whether you look at spousal consent fraud, it doesn't really matter. Any transaction where people are, you know, trying to change your beneficiaries or wire out money, is having an enormous fraud problem right now. That's only getting worse.
Yeah. And we're going to get into what technologists like yourself are doing, but I want to ask you, let's talk about tactics. And, Tim and Russ address this at a very high level. Let's talk about some of these scam tactics. And by the way, these are bad actors at the state level, so bad state actors, but also just like these hacker groups. But what types of tactics are they adopting to trick or trick institutions or also individuals?
Yeah, I like to think of this a couple different ways, right? You've got your garden variety fraud, and then you have what I'll call your sci-fi fraud, right? And one of the challenges is that they're getting conflated, right? And the real problem right now is your garden variety fraud, right? You know, when we first launched this company, I've been doing this for 9 years, we had a conversation with the IRS, and I said they were trying to turn enterprise fraud into retail fraud, right? And they basically wanted to take these attack vectors that someone could do at very, very high scale and figure out how to, through process and through rules, make it so it was challenging to submit records or submit, you know, anything to really slow down the scale of the problem. And so what we're seeing in that world now is, you know, given just basic tools, kind of anyone can falsify a record, right? And when you get into the fraud data, you know, the key drivers are impersonation and false records. If you think about being, you know, someone in this audience who's trying to process a power of attorney or a spousal consent, you just get a document. Right. And you're trying to decide, do I trust this document or not? Right. But someone with, you know, Acrobat and some simple tools is able to edit one of these documents and submit it. And if you think about, you know, the investments that people have made in their technology infrastructure, firewalls, security, and these are solvable problems using existing technology today. You know, the segment earlier talking about Limra and FraudShare. You know, people need to work together. We need to connect systems. Those are totally solvable problems. And then there's what I would call the sci-fi fraud. This is what's in the news, right? So deep fakes, you know, AI, voice biometric theft, you know, all this sort of stuff. And those are real problems too. But those are also solvable, you know, by technology companies. We're very focused on solving those problems and feel that we have a good handle on them. And I think one of the shifts that we're seeing, you know, I was at a conference recently, and what was reported is that a lot of institutions are now trying to go from point solution to orchestration platforms, right? And going from securing when someone signs up KYC to securing the entire customer lifecycle. Every time someone submits something to you, authorizes something to you, how are you certain that it's the intended person and what they submit can be trusted? So it's an evolution.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, I think for the average individual, and it might, by the way, it might be scary for the chief information officer who has to, or the chief security officer, the CSO, who's got to defend, because you're always under attack. It's not like you can go on the offensive against a hacker group. You're not going to go attack them, but you got to defend, and you don't know what tactics are going to take. Pat, let's talk a little bit more about how technologies are responding, because you mentioned kind of the platform or have an all-encompass platform. How do technologies respond? Because again, you're defending. You know, these tactics change; they're dynamic. They probably change day to day, week to week. And even though there's probably some uniformity there, but how do technologies companies like yours adapt to this type of fraud?
Yeah, I mean, I would for the sake of listeners, maybe also expand the scope of the problem. Right, you've got to defend your organization and the assets that you've been entrusted with. I think defend's the right word. But you've also got to comply with the law, and you've got to meet privacy obligations. You know, I heard someone recently say, no one's trying to create Skynet, right? And so, but it's a really challenging intersection of three issues. And so I think our history as a company is instructive, right? So, you know, we started as a company called Notarize.com, doing online notarization, and have really led the advocacy for state laws to now allow for the digital execution of notarized forms. Most recently, we work with Spark and other members of the organization to get the IRS to authorize, you know, digital notarization. But that history over a 9-year period, we complied with all the state laws. You know, we were involved in getting them passed and complying with them. And then we went industry by industry and understood all of the requirements. So first and foremost, you know, people should expect a platform to just manage that for them. You know, comply with the law, deal with my privacy obligations, right? That's first and foremost. And now the new barrier is help me protect my organization against these, you know, attacks that I'm seeing. And again, I think our history is instructive. So, you know, we for a long time have had people using our platform even when it's not required. And they've said, what I have is a high risk, high liability transaction, and I'm going to choose to have it notarized through your platform, because what I'm going to get is an evidentiary trail and an audit trail, right, of what occurred. I'm going to have a person on video, right? I'm going to have the entire identity verification process. I'm going to have certainty my document wasn't manipulated or altered. And so we've always been pushed, right, outside of what you would consider core notarization. And 80% of notarizations are effectively identity transactions. They're, you know, affidavits. You say, I attest to the fact that I am, you know, Pat Kinsell, right? And you go through this identity process. So we've been asked, how do we up-level the security of that? And also, how do we reduce the friction so it can be used for even more things? And so that's why we launched Proof. And Proof, what it does is it's this orchestration platform where you can choose, I want to get on video. I want to put people through a certain series of challenges, right? But we've also added tons of data to the platform. And data is the critical, you know, solution to this problem set. And again, something like LIMRA and FraudShare is critical, because if you think about someone coming through now and being able to, you know, steal a likeness of your face, you know, Jeff, and jump on video and claim to be you, you need a lot more signal. You need to know, have we seen them on this device before? You know, are they exhibiting a pattern that we would expect them to normally have? You know, has their cell phone been compromised? Has their email been compromised, right? And ultimately, you know, very few companies actually have enough exposure to the customer to create that rich data set. And so there do need to be things that arise. And I think Visa is a very interesting, you know, corollary, right? You know, their mission is to enable trusted commerce between parties. And what they do is they sit in the middle and they provide this fraud service and ultimately, you know, varying forms of financial guarantees. But really, it's a network, right? And they move people down this path of sharing data in anonymous ways that are privacy preserving. And that's where this has got to go. And so that's with Proof, what we're very focused as a company is helping people secure the entire life cycle using data.
Yeah. And last question, Pat. A lot of consumers out there watching the program or just in general, I mean, we are bombarded as consumers, avoid the scam, avoid the scam, or we're very familiar with two-factor authentication. And I think by and large, people use, reasoning to try to figure out if an email is legit. But I think a lot of people are afraid. What do consumers do to practice the best data hygiene and fraud prevention hygiene they can? Because I think it's one thing for the institution to do something, or a third party like Proof or Visa or whomever, but it takes the consumer because they're also a vulnerability. So what do consumers need to do to protect themselves from all these things that we're talking about this morning?
Yeah, I think most critical, especially for your audience, is for your contact information to be up to date and accurate with your institution. And what I hear a lot specifically in the retirement industry is that, as someone is kind of bounced from employer to employer, the contact information on record may not be accurate. And so at the end of the day, that's the basis for how you're being verified, right? You have got a phone number that they expect to be able to contact you at. And if someone is, trying to steal your money, they're going to call you. And if they don't have that contact information, if you've had any sort of life change, you should be sure that the, sponsor has that access and information. And then you should be looking for suspicious activity across, sort of all of your accounts. If you suspect that anything's been compromised, I think it's worth going and signing into your bank account and signing into your retirement plan and making sure your assets are, are secure. It's a very, very challenging problem for consumers to solve, though. It's only going to get, worse, frankly, for consumers, right? And I think that people's expectation of what consumers should understand is part of the problem. When I worked at Microsoft, there was a survey of who knew what a browser was, and 80% of consumers said it was Google, right? And MFA, I think, provides a false sense of security. One of the biggest attack vectors is cell phone compromise, and they, get your text messages that you were supposed to receive. So we need to evolve, and I think it's the responsibility of industry. What is encouraging and frightening at the same time is the responsibility issue, which is actively being debated right now. And some of the proposals are that if a spouse defrauds a spouse, it's the plus, plan sponsor that should be, liable. And that to me seems ludicrous, right? And so the tooling needs to evolve. The policy needs to evolve. We believe that we can solve this problem and are solving this problem, but there's a myriad of solutions out there for people to choose from, but doing nothing is not an option.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially we're constantly under attack, whether it's our American infrastructure, whether it's our institutions or as individuals. Pat, we're going to have to leave it there. Great to see you. Thanks for joining us. And we look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Thank you. Take care.
And that wraps up this episode of BRNAM. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, and drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more in all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Well, then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRNAM. We'll have a very special guest and, of course, another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.